Hello and welcome to Millennials Making Mistakes. I'm Caitlin, your host, and I will be talking about mistakes that millennials, including me, are making and how to work through them. This is episode 2. Hello and welcome back to the Millennials Making Mistakes podcast. Last week, I spoke about the reasons that led me to quit my job, all of which began piling up higher and higher until finally I snapped. So, now that the job has been quit, what about that job search? It goes without saying that you should probably, hopefully, have a job lined up in advance. Maybe you don't. I didn't. Either way, you're back on the job hunt. I've interviewed for a lot of jobs, and I've also talked to a lot of HR people and recruiters in getting ready for this podcast, and I wanted to talk today about some of the common themes that came up around making mistakes on resumes and interviews. Now, I know what you're thinking. Caitlin, I don't make any of these mistakes. I've read a million of these articles, and I don't see anything that I'm doing in them. I thought that way too, every single time I saw one of these kinds of articles on LinkedIn. I think that that's a super dangerous mindset to be in. We have all made big mistakes on resumes or cover letters, and I think that these kinds of lists are helpful, even if you're confident in your application. Like how one time I autofilled my name to home. Home Kimmett. Oops. I'm going to break this up a little bit by first talking about how to get an interview and also how to write a killer resume, just some tips there. Then I'm going to talk about at the interview, and then I'm going to finish up with after the interview and follow up. And then I thought we'd have a little chat about just some themes that came up that weren't really fitting into any of those categories. So there'll be a little bit here for everybody. Okay, so you're writing up your resume and you're trying to get an interview. You need to network like crazy. I know that we have all heard this before. You have to network to get ahead. This is not a surprise to any of you listening, I'm sure, but I have found that very few people actually network effectively. The best way to do this is to take it into two prongs. First is the social media approach. Get on LinkedIn and start adding people in your field or at a school you want to get into or at a company that does a similar business to yours, maybe in a city near yours or in the same city if you have a pretty big field, and shoot them a message and a request to connect. I have found that just sending out requests to connect, I tend to get about a 25% hit rate. People will add you back. Then you should send a message asking a specific question about something that has to do with their industry. Mention that you're interested in being in a similar position to where they are now. Do they have any advice? How did they get to where they were? What did they go to school for, if you can't find that out already? Do they know anyone else that you could maybe talk to about this? This social media section is incredibly important, especially if you're networking with other people under 30, people who are in the same position that you want to be in or maybe one step above. I find that a lot of people that I've spoken to about this who are in my kind of age bracket do a really good job with this social media approach. They get on LinkedIn, they add a bunch of people, and they say, I did it, I added a bunch of people, and it didn't turn into a job. This is where you need to take that other half of networking, which is meeting people in person. And this requires a little bit more finesse and a little bit more work on your part. I suggest the best way to do this is to join professional groups or alumni networks and start to meet people in person. When you're networking, mention your current position. What kind of job are you doing now? What did you graduate in? Did you graduate recently? From there, talk about where you'd like to be. Something you could say is, hi, my name is Caitlin. I'm currently an associate at this company, but I'd really like to be a director. I see that that's what you do. Do you have any advice? That is the entry right there. Do you have any advice? People love to talk about themselves, and you want to give them the opportunity to do that. Get their business cards as well. Most professionals carry business cards, and if you aren't carrying business cards, you really should be. And then follow up with them. Send emails about how great your conversation was, and would it be possible for you to pick their brain again at a later date? This follow-up section is probably the most important. Networking requires you to keep following up and contacting people and making new plans and asking new questions. At first, this can be pretty overwhelming, but it does tend to get easier as you build out kind of your personal networking formula where you know, okay, I'm at this party, I've identified 4 people I need to talk to, boom, 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 get those business cards, send those emails, nice and easy. And the more you practice, the easier it gets, but the best thing you can do is get started right now. All right, speaking of social media, you need to lock it down. Yeah, I get it. We all live in a time when LinkedIn is pretty much required, and you probably also have Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, whatever else people are using right now. When I was teaching high school, I was always appalled by how many apps I didn't even know about. It made me feel really old. Whatever it is, lock it down. I have had employers, plural, bring up things they've seen on my social media during an interview. So before you send out a resume, Google yourself. Google yourself multiple times. Ask your friends to Google you. Go into incognito mode and Google yourself some more. Anything that comes up on the front page needs to be vetted by you before you get in that room, or even before you send out a resume. If there is anything even remotely questionable, shut it down. It's fairly easy to change the privacy settings to be only available to your friends. Run through all your social media and private, or delete any photos of your college party days that look kind of questionable. Just get rid of them. On top of that, try to make your profiles look as professional as possible. It's really helpful if your profile picture is maybe a nice professional headshot or a photo of your family, something like that. Your LinkedIn picture really does need to be a professional headshot of just your head and shoulders. And a cohesive LinkedIn post history can do a lot for how employers view you. If you're sharing articles that have to do with your field, they will notice that and they will bring it up. If you're in design or marketing, they might look at your Instagram as a judgment of your work, so try to make that count as well. Okay, you have found the perfect job and you are ready to apply. You need to follow the damn directions. This came up with so many people that I spoke to on this topic. This is a straightforward way that your future employer is using to weed out the people who pay attention and those who don't. Did you put in that you have strong attention to detail on your resume? You've probably ruined it if you failed to read the directions. Most employers just want a resume and cover letter, but I have seen other things as well, even in my field, which was very administrative focused. I've had to submit portfolios, evidence of past work, sometimes even completing small projects. This is especially true if you're in design. Don't be weeded out by missing this obvious thing. Make sure you read through the posting very carefully and are doing everything you can to follow their directions. This is something I had not even thought about. And it is, you need to set up a professional way to receive messages. A long time ago, you probably updated your email address from sparklehorse54 to firstnamelastname@gmail.com like a normal person. I feel like we all did that, you know, when we applied for college and we handled it. You did that, you did a great job. But when was the last time you checked out your voicemail settings? Your voicemail is also an important part of your professional brand. You should script out a new greeting with a clear statement of your full name. Also, check your voicemail and empty it out. I have been trying to call prospective candidates and been unable to leave a message, and I've just called the next person on the list. Your employer is not going to be impressed if they can't leave a message because it's so full, and they are unsure if they've even reached the right person. If there is a reason they can't reach you at this time, planned vacation or something, mention that in your voicemail too. For instance, I'm going out of the country soon, so I would say something like, I will be out of the state from May 5th to 10th with limited cell phone coverage. During that time, please email me at firstnamelastname@gmail.com. Another thing I've noticed, and I've had employers who were guilty of this, is leaving the longest voicemail ever. If you have to leave a voicemail, keep it super short, and when you're making your greeting, also keep it short. Short and professional. So you did a great job. You've gotten the interview. The interview has arrived. Here are some things that I think we should be thinking about as we get ready for our interviews. The first one is wear appropriate interview attire. Well, duh, that's what I said and probably what you were just thinking. I was so surprised by how common it is for people to come poorly dressed. I feel like this is pretty much interviewing 101, but of all the HR managers I talked to in getting ready for this podcast, this came up with every single one of them, and they said it is a huge issue. One, who works for a pretty large accounting firm here in Minneapolis, said that nearly half of all the interviewees are rejected based on inappropriate attire. Half. A very common example is women with hemlines that were too short. Ladies, you gotta keep it to the knee. I know it's super old-fashioned, but you still have to do it. Or people who are dressed in a very trendy way for a conservative workplace. As part of your research on the company, you should learn about their dress code. What do employees in your position usually wear? If you're applying to a larger company and working mostly with a recruiter in HR and not with your prospective boss, it's also really easy to ask them what's appropriate to wear to the interview. Is this a suit and tie type situation, or is it okay to wear something a little bit more casual? When in doubt, you should always dress more formally than you would. You can always roll up sleeves or take off a cardigan, but you're going going to be really upset if you don't have that option and you're underdressed. The first question that generally comes up in interviews is, tell us about yourself or about your professional experience. I've been thinking about it, and I'm pretty sure that this was part of every single interview that I've ever had. So when I started talking to HR managers, I was really surprised when they said that this is actually the hardest question during the interview because you're probably oversharing. When the interview is asking you this, they don't want your whole life story. They want to know the things about you that matter for the job. They've already seen your resume and they know what's on it, so don't spend this time reiterating that. Just try to do the highlights. They don't want to know where you went to preschool. They don't want to know about your family. Three different HR people I spoke to said the ideal amount of time spent on this section is only 2 to 3 minutes. And 2 to 3 minutes is a lot less time than you're probably thinking, so definitely practice this one before you go into your interview. Another mistake that got brought up quite a bit was not asking any questions at the end of the interview or asking bad questions. I'm going to admit something to you right now, which is that I never asked questions. Seriously, never. I would usually ask about the timeline moving forward, which is interview speak for when do I know if I got this job, but that was it. I think about this and it just makes me cringe so hard. The last job, I know I landed because of the questions I asked. Seriously, you have to ask good questions. Pick at least 5 decent questions. And it's important that they are not about salary or benefits. Instead, some questions I would pick are how this position fits into the long-term plans of the company or business, or what the number one major goal of the person this position should be for the next year. Asking these questions make it look like you're not indifferent about the job and that you're also paying attention about how it will fit into your life. It also shows that you have done your research on the company and that you are looking into more how it will both fit you and you will fit them. Again, try to come up with 5 really good questions. These questions also allow for a more informal exchange between you and the people at your interview where you're talking about what it really is like to work at this place beyond the standard questions. So definitely use this portion of time to your advantage. I was once conducting a phone screen on a candidate where the other person was sitting inside of a busy McDonald's. You need to have your phone interviews in a quiet place. I know that between dogs, kids, and roommates, finding a quiet place is pretty hard. I know it is in my life, but you still need to handle this. If you have to lock yourself in your apartment's tiny, awful bathroom, that's totally okay. Just keep it quiet. On another note, poor cell reception. I was once on a call with somebody who was trying to speak to me about an important project they wanted to do when they were inside of a brick basement. There was just no way I could hear them, and they were breaking up all the time. Go somewhere where this is not a problem. Your interviewer will understand, or at least should understand, if there is a little bit of incidental noise, but you should not be conducting your business in a moving car, while walking outside, or at a bus stop, even if it's just a standard phone screen that's only going to take 5 or 10 minutes. You've gotten through the interview, you're super excited about this job, but you still have one more thing to do, and it's after the interview, you need to follow up and say thank you. Send an email within 24 hours to say thank you is pretty standard. I would say 24 hours is too long. You should probably make it more like 12. I find that it's also best to send it to every single person who is at your interview. This can be complicated, especially that time I was interviewed by a 9-person panel, but it's totally worth it because it will set you apart. But here's the trick. You need to send a handwritten thank you note. You know, make your grandma proud. You can go to Target and get a $3 pack of thank you notes and start writing them. Sometimes I would do it on my way back from the interview. I can talk about writing thank you notes in a later episode, but seriously, just send one. The handwritten note will set you apart for sure. When you're doing a lot of job hunting and going to multiple interviews over the course of a week or a month, I probably wouldn't send everyone a handwritten thank you note if it means I'm writing 8 or 10 over the course of a few days. And it's okay to allocate your resources, but be sure to thank all the people at any job you really want. Sending the handwritten thank you note has definitely gotten me a position in the past, and I want you to know the secret for getting a position you want. Okay, so I've been talking for about 15 minutes about my general job hunt tips, and those are all ones I've talked about with people. Here are some ones that didn't really fit in anywhere, and I thought we could just chat a bit. I didn't really script this part out very well, but I feel like it'll be okay. The first thing is that you need to be unafraid to apply for that job. And when this came up, they were talking a lot about women, which I found particularly interesting. It's been shown that men are more likely to apply for jobs that they're not 100% qualified for. For instance, if it says 3 to 5 years experience, guys will apply if they only have 2, whereas women won't apply until they actually have 3 to 5. Just apply for the job. At the very least, they won't give you an interview and you won't get the job anyway, but the very best, you could get this job that's in a good place in a higher salary bracket than you are now. I feel like just overcoming this anxiety is really important. You should apply for the job. You should apply for any jobs in your field that you think you're even remotely qualified for and just take a chance on it. Maybe they didn't get very many qualified applicants and you are the best qualified. You never know. Something that has also come up quite a bit is that millennials typically tend to downplay their age as a disadvantage, talking about how they know they don't have any experience and this is an entry-level job for them. And when I heard this, I was like, what? Why are people doing this? You need to use your age to your advantage. Yeah, you're young. Maybe this is your first job in your field. Maybe it's only your second. Maybe you only have 2 or 3 years of experience and they want somebody with 5. Use your age to your advantage. People our age are much more flexible to change and also to things like technological advancements. You should bring this up. You should say, you know, I only have 2 years of experience in this field, but I feel that my flexibility, my willingness to learn, and my willingness to go above and beyond is totally worth taking the chance on me. Using your age to your advantage makes it sound like you are aware of the limitations you have, but also willing to overcome them. Speaking of understanding advantages and disadvantages, something that a lot of millennials do is use the term we or our more than they are using the word I. When you're talking about your accomplishments, you need to use the word I. A lot of times at work, you were probably on a project where there was 5 or 6 people on the team, and you're afraid of saying the word I did this, I completed this project, because, you know, there were other people on the team, and it's not really fair to them for you to be taking all the credit for this in an interview. It definitely is. You take credit for that. At this interview, they're trying to judge your skills, not your team. They aren't interviewing your entire team to come from your old company with you, so you need to talk about how you did these accomplishments, and then tie that into how you were able to work on a team. Don't lie. Don't say you single-handedly planned an 8,000-person event if you didn't, but mention the specific parts of the event that you did and the parts you worked on a team. Make sure you mention these specific accomplishments and don't just gloss everything over with this we language. Something that a lot of millennials also do is give off this fear of commitment. I know that in our current workplace culture, things are changing. It used to be you would stay at the same job for your entire life and retire after 45 years, but you know that if you're staying in a job for longer than 3 to 5 years, that's a really long time, especially if you're in your early 20s. At the same time, make it clear that you're not afraid to commit. Make this very clear to your employer, because during your interview, your employer is thinking about if they're willing to sink resources into you, to train you, to take this chance on you, to pay you, and they don't want somebody who's going to bail out after 6, 8, a year kind of thing. But don't be afraid to say that you're looking for a place to settle down and be a part of the community, but also be realistic about what you need to do that. Something that has also come up many, many times is that millennials have a hard time striking the balance between entitlement and underselling yourself. You don't have this job when you walk into the room. It's not yours to lose, it's yours to get. During your interview, you are working on getting the job and you're trying to talk the interviewer into giving you this piece of work. And so don't feel like you already have it and come off as arrogant or entitled in your interview, which I have definitely seen, and it's really embarrassing for you, and a lot of times you don't even understand that you're doing it. But at the same time, do not undersell yourself. This goes back to that I more than we. You need to talk about how great you are and how you are a great fit for this company. They need to know that you can do this job and that you are a trustworthy person. I find it also does not hurt to mention that your references would say the exact same thing. My final piece of advice actually comes from when I was doing high school debate, which is that you have a lot of vocal tics that you don't even understand that you have, and also like facial tics, hand gestures that you repetitively make. Listening to myself do this podcast when I'm doing the editing is horrifying because all of a sudden I hear all of these vocal tics, and sometimes you can't cut them out on the podcast. I promise I sound a lot more articulate as you're listening to me now than I did in person. Unfortunately, during your interview, you don't have this sound editing, video editing capability, and your interviewer is going to see you in all of your splendor. Something that is honestly worth its weight in gold is practicing in front of somebody to identify what these vocal tics even are. Because a lot of times you don't know. I find that when I talk, I say, you know, a lot, which was something I didn't even know about until after somebody had mentioned it to me. If you don't have anybody who's available to come and watch you, something that you can do is set up a video camera, even on your iPhone is totally fine, and tape yourself. You can do this late at night, you can do it early in the morning, so you're not as dependent on other people's schedules. Tape yourself and then just watch it back. It is scary You will notice things that you have never noticed before, especially if you're not super used to seeing yourself on camera, and it will all of a sudden make you realize all the weird stuff you're doing with your body and with your voice while you talk. Something that you can do when you're doing this practice is run through a couple of the common interview questions and think of your answers in advance, especially in your field. I know that when I was doing teaching and looking at teaching jobs, stuff that comes up a lot is how you deal with difficult students, and I would stand in front of the mirror and practice my answers, and then I would videotape myself doing them, or I'd do them in front of my parents and ask how I did, and they would mention specific vocal tics, they would mention specific hand motions that I would repetitively make, I would look away at certain times when I was talking, things like that that I didn't notice. So take a minute to think about the most common questions that you will be asked during this interview, whatever your field is, and go through those on camera and have somebody else watch the tape with you. Not only will this really help you for your job interview, but it will also generally help you in life. It makes you a little bit more self-aware, it makes you think about how other people are perceiving you, and remember, other people are not going to be nearly as critical of you as you are going to be of you, which is why it helps to have somebody else watch the tape with you. So that is the show for today. I want to say thank you for all your wonderful support for our first episode. The feedback has been so wonderful. If you would like to leave us some feedback, please do so at millennialsmakingmistakes@gmail.com. And if you're job hunting, I really do wish you the best of luck. It is terrifying, and I hope these tips really make a difference in your job hunt experience. I know it can get exhausting, but you can do this. Again, I will say that this show does have a Patreon where you can help support us at patreon.com/mmmpodcast. Please think of it as a tip jar. If you like what you hear and if you feel these tips helped you get a job, please go check out our page to make a monthly contribution. Your contribution can be as little as $1 a month, and you'll also be able to see exclusive content and rewards. I'd really appreciate it if you would check it out. Go make some mistakes, hopefully learn from them, and I'll be back next week with another episode.